Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
By the numbers. Ector County, COVID-19. 37,485 total cases, 702 deaths. Midland County, 40,747 total cases, 495 deaths. Texas, 6,806,021 total cases, 88,011 deaths. U.S. cases, 80,768,446 total confirmed, and 988,589 deaths. Find out more at COVIDinthebasin.com. Odessa American obituaries published Sunday, April 24th. Billy G. Moore, Marble Falls, Texas. Our beloved dad, papa, brother, and Uncle Billy, Bill G. Moore, born on September 21st, 1931, passed away peacefully on April 13th, 2022, to be with his Lord and Savior and join his beloved wife, Daphne, and other loved ones that have gone on before him. Bill was born September 21st, 1931, to Homer A. and Emma J. Moore in Harlingen, Texas. Bill is survived by his son, Mike Moore, and wife, Mickey, his daughter, Tony Vanderberg, and husband, Glenn, his sister, Jane Howard Bynum, and husband, Bill, plus grandchildren and 20 great-grandchildren and 4 great-great-grandchildren. Bill is preceded in death by his father, Homer A. Moore, his mother, Emma J. Moore, his beloved wife, Daphne Moore, his son, Mark Moore, his daughter, Diana Holliday, and grandson, Marshall Moore. Bill lived a long, full life, and for the most part was pretty healthy for his ripe old age of 90 until he fell and broke his hip. The family would like to express their gratitude for the love and care he received from his caregivers at Gateway Gardens and from Texas Home Health Accent Hospice Care. The family will have a celebration of life ceremony honoring Bill in the near future. Betty Jean, the Hat Lady, Ridgeway, Clark, Houston. Betty Jean Clark, 91, of Houston, passed into her eternal home April 19, 2022. Betty was born in Three Sands, Oklahoma, on August 8, 1930. She's preceded in death by her parents, William Ridgeway and Elnora Carson, and husband, Garland E. Clark. She was married to Garland E. Clark 50 years on April 12, 1949. Betty is survived by her children, Dorinda Atkins, Ed Clark, and Michelle Howard, and their spouses, along with her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to consider a donation in Betty's honor to Northside Baptist Church, Odessa, Texas. The family of Betty Jean Clark wishes to thank the many friends for their thoughts and prayers. Death notices from Sunday, April 24th. Juana Mita Castaneda, Odessa. Juana Mita Castaneda, 92, of Odessa, died Thursday, April 21st in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Tuesday, April 26th at Acres West 24-hour chapel. Rosary precedes services beginning at noon. Burial follows services at Odessa Two Gardens, Ector County Cemetery. Father Joseph Euchre is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ronald James Ronnie Hurst, Odessa. Ronald James Ronnie Hurst, 69, died Sunday, April 17th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sean McCracken, Odessa. Sean McCracken, 49, of Fallon, California, died Friday, April 15th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Robert Lee McCrimmon, Jr., Odessa. Robert Lee McCrimmon Jr., 55, died Thursday, April 21st in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Earl Rodman, Odessa. Earl Rodman, 98, of Odessa, died Saturday, March 26th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. April 29th at First Baptist Church, Odessa. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 25th. Refineries running at high whine. Some expansions being undertaken to handle lighter crudes. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Called on to produce more with the pandemic's waning and the resurgence of worldwide demand, Texas oil refineries are running flat out and meeting the call, analysts say. But various difficulties make building new refineries or expanding them a tall task. Odessa oil man Kirk Edwards says it, quote, has been impossible to get a new refinery built because of environmental regulations and lawsuits. Coming off COVID, when gasoline usage was so far down that nobody did anything, there was very little capital investment, Edwards said. There needs to be an expansion of assets here in the U.S., but the catch-22 is what guarantees do these refineries or future liquefied natural gas plants have from the government and Europe to spend that kind of money and make these expansions. The only thing they can do is expand in the areas of the country where the refineries are right now, which is usually the Gulf Coast, end quote. Texas's refineries include Barton Refining's Double Punch Refinery at Austin, ExxonMobil's Baytown and Beaumont refineries, Delek US's refineries at Big Spring and Tyler, Phillips 66 facilities at Borger in the Panhandle and Sweeney, Flint Hills Resources and Citgo refineries at Corpus Christi, Valero's at Corpus Christi, Houston, Port Arthur, Texas City, and Sunray in the Panhandle, Shell Oil's at Deer Park, Marathon Petroleum's at El Paso, Three Rivers and Texas City, Leondell Basil's at Houston, Stratter's at Houston, Calumet Penrico's at Houston, Blue Dolphin's at Nixon, Chevron's at Pasadena, Total Energies at Port Arthur, Arabian American Development at Silsby, and the biggest in the nation with 1,500 employees and a capacity of 607,000 barrels a day, Motiva Enterprises Port Arthur Refinery. Companies are reluctant to respond to press inquiries, but a spokeswoman who asked not to be identified said the cost of building a new refinery would be prohibitive versus the ability to recoup investments. Quote, some older units were closed last year due to inefficiencies and the drumbeat to move toward electric vehicles, she said. Asked about the 25 deaths and 150 injuries from explosions, falls, fires, hydrogen sulfide leaks, and crane collapses that have happened at Texas refineries since 2005, Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples said from Austin, quote, safety and appropriate enforcement are utmost priorities of the Texas oil and natural gas industry. Stringent regulations are in place to maximize workplace safety, and the industry's investments in innovation and technology are aiding in this effort, as well as protecting and improving air quality. End quote. American Fuel and Petroleum Manufacturers spokeswoman Erica Perryman said from Washington, D.C., that some refineries are expanding now, quote, largely to accommodate processing increased volumes of United States-produced light sweet crude oil, and not make only gasoline but also jet fuel, heating oil, propane, butane, ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel and kerosene, heavy fuel oil, and asphalt. Quote, These expansions will ensure that the U.S. continues to have sufficient refining capacity to meet our country's energy needs and still export energy into the global market, Perryman said. She reported that national crude oil production is currently 11.8 million barrels a day, including 5.1 million barrels per day in the Permian Basin in March, while the record was 12.3 million barrels per day in 2019. Quote, U.S. refining capacity is much bigger, 17.9 million barrels per day, so there is not any realistic concern that U.S. production will overwhelm refining capacity, Perryman said. Expansions are meant to increase the share of our capacity designed for lighter crudes, end quote. The AFPM spokeswoman said 70% of American capacity is complex, meaning it's designed for heavier, harder-to-refine oil not produced in the U.S. Quote, our complexity is a competitive advantage, she said, noting that 150 different types of crude oil vary in quality, thickness, and sulfur content. Quote, our number one refinery feedstock is U.S. crude oil, and nearly 90% of what we refine is from the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, Perryman said. What we are mindful of is that some regions, the East and West Coast in particular, have a tougher time accessing American-produced crude oil and refined products. That's a symptom of losing regional refining capacity, not having sufficient pipeline infrastructure to efficiently and affordably move products, and uncompetitive shipping policies that inflate the cost of U.S. crude and refined products compared to products traveling from overseas, end quote. She said the number of Texas refineries fell from 65 in 1982 to 27 in 2015, and then grew to 31, quote, because of the construction of condensate splitters related to figuring out a way around the crude export restrictions. Crude processed through a condensate splitter can be exported, but it's still a feedstock, Perryman said. Texas refining capacity declined from 5.1 million barrels per day to 3.8 in 1993, increased rather steadily to 5.8 in 2020, and then dropped a bit to 5.8 in 2021. Oil brings quality of life improvements to Reeves County. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Oil activity in Reeves County has given the area such a boost that entities can now add some amenities to Pecos, a city of about 14,000. A new county hospital, paid for in cash, new schools and facilities for Pecos Barstow Toya ISD, an expanded golf course, sports complex, and rec center, to name a few, are all in the works or complete, said Ken Winkles, Jr., executive director of Pecos 4B Economic Development Corporation. The hospital is going to be a replacement for the current building. Winkles said the Economic Development Corporation sold the hospital the land is being built on. Winkles said his predecessor, William Oglesby, started the process in late 2014 or early 2015. He said they probably sold the hospital land sometime in the early part of 2016. Quote, I'm glad the new hospital is coming online. They've had their challenges due to the supply chain issues, Winkle said. Brenda McKinney, administrator and CEO of the Reeves County Hospital District, said they are shooting for a mid-June opening. They planned an open house before that. Quote, it'll be badly needed. It's twice as large, give or take, almost twice as large as the current facility, Winkles said. In the last 3 years, Winkles said, Pecos has spent over a third of $1 billion in quality of life items. Quote, you got a $178 million bond for the school. You got a $114 million new hospital. The county spent $18 million on the rec center. The city spent $15 million on the sports complex. The county spent another $8 million on the expansion of the golf course, $2.5 million on the Senior Citizen Center, and another $1 million on the new library. If you add all those up, it approaches $350 million for a town of 14,000 people. So yeah, when you actually put it down on paper, it's a significant amount of expenditures by the taxing entities here to bring in the quality of life issues, Wakel said. Most entities had significant increases in taxable value, except the city of Pecos. Quote, the city only owns the minerals underneath itself, which is the smallest part of Reeves County. They've seen a small increase, Winkle said. For 2021, the city of Pecos received about $773 million in tax revenue. I learned this from a previous councilman. The city has the most infrastructure to take care of with the least amount of tax money, Winkle said. If you take these increases in values and the property tax that is brought in, that's where you get the third of $1 billion worth of new quality of life amenities, Winkle said. With the new hospital, the $114 million price was paid in cash. Quote, there's no debt, so there's no debt for the citizens of Pecos at all on this new hospital, so that's a good thing, Winkle said. He added that the amount of money the county has brought in has allowed them to finance the engineering of the first part of the Eastern Reliever Route, or the Loop. Quote, again, they spent their money wisely. Everybody has, actually. Like I said, when you come up with $350 million worth of new quality of life items in Pecos, that's a significant number, Winkle said. These are all facilities that the county did not have before. Quote, we had no recreation center. We had no sports complex. We did have a hospital that was 40 years old. The schools, Pecos High School was built 54 years ago, and is still going to be there because it's not one of the schools on this bond. But Bessie Haynes Elementary is being replaced, along with Austin Elementary. So it's two new schools coming in. The $350 million doesn't include the $20 million for the new football stadium, Winkle said. He added that a $20 million stadium, complete with purple track and yellow lines for the school colors, is being paid for out of PBTISD's fund balance. Winkle said the oil field has slowed down over the past few years like everybody else, but activity is starting to bounce back, as has the rig count. Quote, we are at 30. We hadn't been at 30 since March of 2020. We've seen a significant increase over the last 2 months. City sales tax is stabilized, he added. He said one of the things he's learned in economic development is that without rooftops, retail doesn't come. Quote, we didn't have the rooftops. So over the last 6 years, we've added 330-some-odd new housing units. That's duplexes, triplexes, apartments, and housing. I've got a 72-unit subdivision going right now that we've already sold 48 lots. We've got 30 new houses on the ground. We brought a new apartment complex online of 144 apartments. We hadn't had a new apartment complex in 50 years. Kind of like the same thing with the grocery store. It took 3 years to get united here. But we now are no longer a one grocery store town. That was a great achievement by everybody that was involved in getting them here, Winkle said. He added that he is currently in negotiations with new to national chains to bring new locations into Pecos. He said one of them is Burke's Outlet to replace Bell's. He added that other area small towns have done the same thing. Quote, I'm trying to always deal with national chains, but in my job, everything takes so long. Like United, it was 3 years, but it was well worth the wait. Good things come to those who wait, Winkle said. The Texas Department of Transportation has already taken over the yet-to-be-built reliever route from U.S. Highway 285 south to Highway 285 north. TxDOT told Reeves County they should do the engineering and the studies, and then TxDOT would see if they would take it over. The county hired Frank Spencer of Spencer & Associates in El Paso, and they conducted the studies. Winkle said the takeover is sometime around 2026. It includes about 2.5 years of right-of-way acquisition. Quote, "So somewhere around 26, we should see the eastern reliever route start by TxDOT. They've officially taken it off of Reeves County's hands and got it in their pipeline. Now the city or the county is working on the second section being a connector from south to 285. Over to Highway 17, so that would be Section 2 of the loop," Winkle said. He added that the whole loop will probably happen in about 20 years. "The eastern reliever route, or loop, will bring the traffic count down," he said. The intersection of U.S. 285 and Business I-20 has averaged 11,400 vehicles a day in the last 4 years. Of that, about 20% of it is truck traffic. Quote, "There's about 2,500 trucks that come through that intersection a day. It, the loop, will highly bring the truck traffic down in downtown Pecos," Winkle said. North 285 used to be referred to as the Highway of Death, but Winkle said accidents have been cut significantly with the installation of Super 2s in the last roughly 4 years. Super 2s are rural highways that include periodic passing lanes. He added that he understands that TxDOT has plans to expand 285 south all the way to Fort Stockton. Winkles also looks at drilling permits, and through the first 3 months they are up 120% over last year. Quote, "Here's the way I look at it, is drilling permits tell you what's going to happen. So if you don't have any drilling permits, ain't nothing happening. This year through March 31st, we've had 284. Last year, 144. So it's up 120%. We were at 30 rigs last week, and a month ago, we were at 22. That doesn't sound like much. However, that's a 20% increase. The last time we were at 30 was March of 2020, exactly 2 years ago," Winkle said. "They were at 85 rigs in November 2018. Quote, "So the more rigs, the more sales tax, the more activity. And what I look at, again, is the drilling permits," Winkle said. "The drilling permits tell you that sooner or later, companies will be drilling because they don't get those drilling permits for nothing," he added.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Odessa American for Monday, April 25th. Redistricting meeting set. A meeting of the Ector County Redistricting Joint Task Force Committee, a committee formed pursuant to an interlocal agreement between the Ector County Independent School District, the Ector County Hospital District, Odessa Junior College District, Ector County, and the City of Odessa, will be held at 4 p.m. today. The gathering will be in Conference Room AB on the third floor of the ECISD Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The meeting will include a presentation by an outside legal consultant of example redistricting plans applicable to Ector County ISD, Ector County Hospital District, and Odessa College, based on 2020 census data. Discuss example plans and possible amendments to develop a new redistricting plan for future recommendation to Ector County ISD, Ector County Hospital District, and Odessa College. Discuss and establish tentative meeting schedule.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Diuretics and Potassium. Dear Dr. Roach, don't diuretics lower potassium? Does it have to be replaced? Answer. Diuretics are commonly used drugs for treatment of high blood pressure and heart failure, among many other issues. Some, especially the thiazide class, including HCTZ and chlorothalidone, and loop diuretics such as furosemide, can cause potassium loss, while others, such as triiodopamine and spironolactone, raise the serum potassium level. Most people on diuretics do not need potassium replacement, but a potassium level should be checked periodically to make sure it remains in the normal range. Both too high and too low potassium levels can cause problems. Occasionally, a potassium supplement, or switching to or adding a dose of a diuretic that raises potassium, is needed.
Man uses wife's infidelity to forge an online persona. Dear Abby, I ended my 24-year marriage after learning my wife, in addition to several one-night stands, had an affair with a married couple for 9 years. She also gave me an STI. I was faithful, though I admit to being difficult to live with. We were unable to agree on parenting, finances, health, fitness, diet, religion, politics, and more. I worked hard, but I was a present and an active father, attending all games, concerts, and activities, as well as coaching and teaching my children in music and the arts. In the pursuit of helping other men deal with the grief of infidelity, divorce, and mental health, I began sharing my experience on a social media platform. My oldest child has now chosen to write me off and refuses to speak to me. I'm hurt, but I respect her decision. I will not silence my story, as it is a tool of empowerment for other men. It's a way to build a relationship with. Is there a way to build a relationship with this adult child? Signed, Disappointed Dad in the Midwest. Dear Dad, your daughter may be embarrassed or angry because you are publicly labeling her mother as an adulteress. Once she is willing to concede that there are often two sides to every story, she may mend fences, but it won't happen until she's ready and you cannot force it. Dear Abby, I've noticed so many obituaries omit where the person worked. A lot of people worked on the same places for many years. Co-workers and acquaintances, I'm sure, would like to pay respects to those who have passed. Too often, by the time they find out, the person has been laid to rest. My late wife was a nurse for almost 40 years and came in contact with many people. The outpouring of love from family, friends, and acquaintances from her social work and work lives was overwhelming and heartfelt. They say if we have memories of our loved ones touching others' lives, they live on in our hearts forever. People, please don't let their memories fade. Let families know to include the work history of their loved one in the obituary, particularly if they had jobs dealing with the public. Signed, Remembering Well in Ohio. Dear Remembering, because the obituaries obituaries one reads in the newspaper are costly, it's possible the writers try to keep them brief in order to save money. I am, however, printing your helpful reminder for those who may need it. Dear Abby, I was wondering, even though we call our priests fathers, can I also call him Dad? Why or why not? Signed, Pondering in the West. Dear Pondering, I posed your question to Father Guy Grath, a longtime friend in the Milwaukee Archdiocese. He chuckled and told me this is a standing joke among Catholics who've been known to refer to the rectory as the home for unwed fathers. He went on to say, the formal answer to your question is no. Calling a priest dad is likely to offend some people. He suggests the corrected term father, reverend, or pastor be used. Thank you, Father Guy.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.